Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Jersey Beat. I'm your host, Donna Roman Hernandez. Today's show, we're talking about putting victims first. As we all know, many of the months celebrate specific holidays and special days. Well, our upcoming month in April does that as well. So I'd like to highlight one of the observances, and that is Child Abuse Prevention, Including Sexual Awareness, and National Crime Victims Week. I put them collectively together because these three observations promote and protect the welfare of children and adults, and additionally, they raise awareness about crime victim issues. Every April, there is an observation called National Crime Victims Week. And each year that has a theme, and this year's theme is Empowering Communities, Empowering Victims, that emphasizes the role of the entire community, not only individually but collectively coming together to support victims of crime and to empower them to direct their own recovery. As a former law enforcement officer and crime victim myself, I really have a handle on what it feels like to be victimized. And I understand that, and everyone else does, how difficult it is to identify and prosecute some of these predator criminals who sexually violate individuals and abuse children. It's a tough topic to talk about, but the reason I'm talking about it today is because we see victimization in all parts of our life. More recently, with the downing of the German Wings airplane, allegedly downed, I might say, by the co-pilot who locked himself in the cockpit this past Tuesday and intentionally rammed the plane full speed into the French Alps. Now, I'm strictly going based on what's been reported. However, the evidence is mounting that this individual who was alone in that cockpit, the captain was barred out, could not get through the fiberglass steel door that was installed that separates the cockpit from the seating area. He tried numerous times, it has been reported and heard also on audio, to get in there to find out what was happening. And it didn't sound from that audio that was played that there was some illness that had overtaken the co-pilot. They could hear him breathing. So victimization happens all over the place. And unfortunately, with the downing of an aircraft of the magnitude and the amount of passengers that were seated in that airplane, the victims had no rights because they were just held captive. As the plane went into that into the Alps, you know, their lives were taken senselessly, and hopefully their families will be able to at least find out the reason why. And victims like those in that airplane, victims of sexual assault, child abuse, really, we want to know the why behind the victimization. And the word closure has been thrown around, that people get closure if they know why. It's not about closure. It's about moving forward individually as victims, because not all victims can move forward from their victimization. So celebrating Crime Victims Week reminds us, not only in the law enforcement profession, but in the advocacy field, in every medical field, that you have to put the victims' rights first and what's best in the rights of for the rights of the victim. For crime victims, the best analogy that I use when I give my presentations about victimization is, each day for a crime victim may be a new mountain to climb. And the reason I use that analogy is because there's grief attached with it, sorrow. You have depression, anger, and fear. And fear really keeps victims stuck, stuck in time. It's very difficult to move beyond the fear of re-victimization. And it's important for law enforcement officers specifically to understand the emphasis on putting the needs of the victims first. attached to that, putting the needs of the victim first, comes with that challenges, response challenges to investigate, and challenges to prosecute. Because these offenders that are offending children and adults against their will, without permission, and those violations of one's body remains a constant memory with the victim. These manipulators, what they do is they silently control and methodically prey on the vulnerabilities of their victims, especially with children, with the luring, the manipulation, and the grooming of the child, the trust factor that has been developed. And it's been recently reported that 90%, up to 90% of victims of child, sexual assault know their perpetrators. And I'm sure that number would be even higher, not given the fact that most victims of sexual assault are either report but not fully report or don't report. So those, when I say statistics, I just use it as a basis for letting all of you know that the numbers are extremely high, because we don't know, of course, how many people don't report it or underreport it. We can only go with the statistics that are reported through the Uniform Crime Reports nationwide. So let's get back to the putting the victims first. As I said, victims are fear re-victimization, so they often suffer in silence, as I did. And then when and if the victim's abuse is revealed and potentially reported, he or she, because men are victims, are crime victims as well, of sexual assault, of child abuse, and other related crimes, they may be uncooperative in identifying who did it. That was my fear. Being the victim of domestic violence, I knew who my violator was. It was my father, not sexually, but through battering and manipulation of verbal abuse. I was afraid to report that, and I never reported it. I only came out with my story after I retired from law enforcement a couple of years ago, and had produced a documentary to help me get through the battles that I had with all my demons and all these memories, repressed memories that were coming forward. And after I produced and distributed my film, I had a plethora of people email me, call me, and say, "I didn't know. We would have helped you." And at that time, I didn't want help. I just wanted to get out. I wanted to escape the violence. I know better now, just through my expertise in the subject matter, and knowing that help was available, even if it was not as available as it is today. But I was stuck in fear, and I thought that my father would re-victimize me, and as most of you know who listened to the show, he did, by almost taking my life. So I understand, as a human being, the feelings of fear, but I know that my father is not coming back from the grave to get me. It's those memories that are haunting, that make you feel anxious, that you could be re-victimized. So that's what I mean by the word stuck. You just get stuck within your own person and try to get out of that victimization. But unless you take the right steps to get help, life is not easy and becomes increasingly difficult as the years go on, because you're just holding all this toxic stuff inside your body, the memories. And so as law enforcement understands, putting the victim first, that makes the victim feel as if they are being put first. So it's a cooperative partnership between law enforcement and the victim to enable the victim to gain self-esteem and confidence to stand up and talk about this potentially in a court of law. And it aids the law enforcement officer, who can move forward in the with the prosecutional aspect of it, because the victim would be more willing to cooperate, to give information, potentially identify the offender, and with the best case scenario, the offender gets prosecuted and penalized for the egregious offenses. that are done against the person. And the officers need help to do this. The victims need help, but the officers need help too. And that may not come from the victim. However, in my opinion, a victim-centered, multidisciplinary team approach is the effective way for law enforcement officers to handle the cases of child maltreatment and sexual violence. Okay, so what do I mean by that? It's a phrase. It may, those not in law enforcement might say, what is she talking about? Well, I'm going to break it down for you. The victim-centered approach requires that all the service providers, and that's an advocacy term, but it also applies in the law enforcement field, that all the players need to come to the table, basically. Law enforcement officers, prosecutors, judges, social workers, physicians, and therapists. All of their roles are important in the victim's world. And by using this multidisciplinary team approach, as I said, victim-centered, the victim's wishes, safety, and welfare, they're the priority in all matters and procedures. Now, it's important, and it doesn't always work well initially when you put a team together, but they need to work together with a common concern and to communicate that to each other with mutual respect. Law enforcement officers are no more important than the social workers, who are no more important than the rest of the team. All the egos have to be put to the side, and they have to use this approach as a mechanism to discuss and resolve any of their internal differences. So when the victim's rights and needs are put first, the team is ready and provide that support to the victim. And internally, the advocates and the service providers work in conjunction with whatever the victim's needs are, whether it's to minimize the victim's re-traumatization associated with the criminal justice system, or it's just to hold the victim's hand, to talk to the family, and let them know that everyone is on the same page. That's what a team is. Everyone's on the same page, working towards a goal with a mission to help and to solve problems. And that's what I feel is necessary, because the needs and concerns of the victim ensures that that team is going to deliver some compassion and sensitivity, especially in a non-judgmental manner. So if this is an approach is employed in criminal justice investigations, there will be successful prosecutions because you have victims' rights, dignity, and their own self-worth moving towards their recovery. Victims' rights has not been around for 2 weeks or 2 years. This has been a philosophy and in the advocacy field for decades. But we are now understanding more how it helps victims, because victims have the right to be informed, they have the right to be protected and be heard. Also, to be notified, and their right to restitution. Now, utilizing Crime Victims Advocacy Network and the National Center for Victims of Crime, there are so many programs that are available to aid victims of crime. And I want to give you their website, because I believe so much in what they do, and there's so much more information listed other than what I've given you today, which is just basically highlights of how I feel. And their website is www.ncvc.org. And they're here to help. So if you know anyone who is a crime victim or anyone who has been victimized, who wants to know what their legal rights are, the reality of their legal rights, a lot of information is on that website, and important dates and upcoming events, especially in April, that could be very helpful to, as I said, a crime victim or the family of a crime victim who's looking for a path, a way to go to help their loved one throughout this very long journey towards recovery and empowerment. So I want to just segue into that with understanding what sexual violence, because the month of April also speaks about the awareness of sexual violence. Now, we know that anyone at any time can become a crime victim and experience sexual violence. That includes children, teens, adults, and elderly people. And it's shameful that anyone would even think of harming a very vulnerable population like children and the elderly. But there are these manipulative, toxic batterers out there that prey, as I said in the beginning of the show, on the vulnerabilities of others. Now, the perpetrator may be a stranger, acquaintance, you know, friend, family member, or intimate partner. But it can also be, unfortunately, someone in the professional field. It could be someone in the clergy. We've heard stories of victimization nationwide. Law enforcement officers, firefighters. I mean, anyone in a first responder sworn position that's there to uphold the law. I feel difficulty with even mentioning it. But, you know, this is a reality show. We're the Jersey Beat. We talk about subjects that other radio shows and even the media don't talk about. It happens. It happens with school teachers. It happens with people of authority, people that are supposed to be trusted individuals by our society. Doctors, nurses, average Joes and gals who just, have professions that are valuable to our society but have this perverse attraction to violating and sexually abusing others. According to the National Justice Center, this is the definition. These are the elements that fit under sexual violence, I should say. It's a crime in any form of unwanted, unwelcome, forceful, or coercive sexual conduct, including but not limited to sexual assault, rape, sexual contact, intimate partner violence, sexual exploitation, human trafficking, and sexual abuse that occurs when someone is forced or manipulated into unwanted sexual activity without their consent. That's a heck of a lot of violations. It's crazy that, you know, in 2015, we have all of this damage that's being done to individuals because of someone's perverse perception of control and authority is. Which leads into sexual violence is motivated by the abuser's need to overpower, control, degrade, and humiliate another individual. And this can be done through a range of unwanted behaviors, as I said, we've heard about and we read about. And those that are attempted or completed against a victim's will, or, and this is important, when a victim cannot consent because of age, disability, or the influence of alcohol or drugs. This type of assault can involve a threatened physical force, the actual use of weapons, and through coercion, intimidation, pressure, and more. As a victim not only of domestic violence, but as a victim of sexual assault, not in the family setting, but by someone that I really didn't know, but I saw in social circles, it happens very quickly for the victim. But most times these predators, they plan the assault. They see when the opportunity is ripe for it, when the victim is alone, surprised, and they operate internally on a time clock. So the victim could be caught off guard as I was, or the victim could be set up for the assault by an acquaintance, or even a stranger who has been stalking the victim, male and female, as I said before. Gender-wise, more women report, but because the ratio of reporting is so low, we really don't know, truthfully, the amount of men who as boys were sexually abused and as adults sexually violated. So there's a survey reported through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about intimate partner violence and sexual violence. and they report that it is the most rapidly growing and underreported crime, as I've alluded to throughout the show. However, according to the survey in 2010, nearly one in two women and one in five men experienced sexual violence, victimization, other than rape at some point in their lives. And I know, and they've reported, that victimization at that level of victimization, sexual violence, causes what they call a ripple effect of consequences beyond the immediate injury, with significant short-term or long-term impacts. And those are the things that haunt us sexual violence. Those memories that are repressed or even everyday present can influence our moods, our long-range planning goals, interactions with intimate partners, friends, because it's a burden to carry that. It's a very silent burden. And disclosing it brings shame, embarrassment. You expose your own vulnerabilities, especially my being a law enforcement officer for almost 30 years. I didn't think anybody would believe me. And I know others that have told me confidentially why they never spoke about their victimization, because they didn't want that to be their calling card. They didn't want people to think this is who they are because of what happened to them. So moving forward is not easy when it comes to disclosure. And recovery is not easy when you disclose, because you think that people aren't looking at you for who you are. They're looking at you for who you are in time. And even speaking about it today, and I've said on other shows, after I speak about my victimization, even if it's generally speaking about it, it bothers me that I have betrayed someone. And I know that sounds bizarre, but with a biological connection to my abuser, my father, I feel like I'm betraying father-daughter confidence. And once again, I know that sounds bizarre, but that's the world that a victim lives in, a crime victim lives in. It's that going back and forth with, oh, I know my accuser, and I know they've done this to me, but if I talk about it, it's not right because the other person isn't hearing me talk about it and they can't defend themselves. But, you know, they have no rights to defend. Once you abuse and violate the rights of someone, the abuser has no rights, other than what's given by the Constitution to a trial and all of that stuff. But they have no rights to talk badly about me or any other victim. So it's this enigma. This victimization is an enigma. It's a puzzle that we have within ourselves. And we don't have all the pieces to that puzzle. And sometimes we put a piece into the puzzle, we're thinking that we've completed that puzzle, or we've come full circle. And then something happens that triggers a memory, and that puzzle gets burst. The pieces go all over the place, and you're constantly trying to put back those pieces to that puzzle to give yourself an internal comfort, an internal feeling of well-being, of I'm not going to be a victim again. I won't be re-victimized, but it doesn't take it away. But there is help out there. There are many great organizations nationally, and there's great organizations within states. In New Jersey, the New Jersey Coalition Against Sexual Assault and JCASA. It's a great resource for anyone who has been violated through sexual violence. And I sit on their law enforcement advisory board now because I help them help others. And that's what victims do to each other. They really try in some way, shape, or form to help one another. And law enforcement's job is to serve and protect. So it's a great combination when law enforcement comes together with the advocacy groups, whether it's sexual assault or child abuse, human trafficking, any of the violence-related crimes. where there's control, coercion, intimidation, assault, fear, and all of that. So many organizations that are set up to do just that. They come together to help victims and help victims understand why they don't want to tell about it. Help victims get through the self-blame and the shame that they have. Because as I said, in the mind of the survivor, the victim who does survive, the fear is forever. That threat of harm or re-victimization or the thought of a reoccurrence of that attack. That oftentimes, as I said, and I'll repeat it, makes the victim feel alone and stuck. That it's their burden alone and not to share. Which is not the truth. Survivors know that telling the truth might inflict pain upon their family and their loved ones, so they think that this burden is theirs alone to carry, to protect them. But no one asks to be sexually violated or abused. And survivors, just like me, we can't undo what has happened. We have to realize that that was then, and this is now. And for me, it took me more than 30 years to get where I am. 30 years. But now I am where I am, and I'm not staying quiet anymore. And thanks to the Jersey Beat and these airwaves, Blog Talk Radio, and Alex Martinez, who is our engineer for the Jersey Beat, who's also an active duty police officer in South Florida, we appreciate the connections. So I've given you a lot of information. I've told you where you can go to offer support, get support. And I want you to know that I'm here for you, all of my listeners. And if you need help and you need a network, contact me on Facebook, inbox me at the Jersey Beat. And I'm there for you, always will be there for you. And I thank you for tuning in and helping me be a part of that team approach, that victim-centered approach to helping crime victims. So thank you for tuning in. Facebook me, inbox, at the Jersey Beat. And the bottom line is we all have to stay well and stay healthy. Thank you for tuning in to the Jersey Beat.